You're listening to Frank Sinatra Jr. with the Terry Woodson Orchestra. Recently, I had a chance to enjoy a conversation with Frank Sinatra Jr. at an appearance at Mohegan Sun.
That face, that wonderful face.
The American Songbook, the music that you work with and the arrangers that you have access to, too, remarkable in terms of what you can get out of this orchestra with those arrangements and those charts.
We have my conductor, Terry Woodson. We have our lead trumpet and our jazz trumpet. We have two trumpets on staff with just me. Then we have lead trombone. We have two woodwinds on staff plus the rhythm section so that they can help to piece those things together and explain to their various sections what's required from one minute to the next. Without them, it would never work. These arrangements are too intricate. We have 37 musicians on the stage, and it is it's not an easy thing. It's not for the faint. It's not for beginners. It's not for the faint of heart. And that's why we have our staff people, for that very reason.
Being here and hearing you rehearse, and I notice that very conscious of dynamics. Dynamics is, I imagine, a big important of what you do in terms of your sound man, too, who's got to be right on top of it. So it's a coordinated effort?
The sound engineer, our man out of New Jersey over there, who is excellent, he's one of the few people in this day and age who knows how to amplify and produce the sound of real instruments, because everything else today is either drums or electronic, one thing or another. The word dynamics is not in that dictionary, not at all when it comes to that kind of sound. However, with a concert orchestra, which is exactly what we have, it must be so. It must have all those things. There is a group effort. Your assumption is correct. The sound engineer has a cue book that has sound cues for all of the arrangements.
They like to chat about the dresses they will wear tonight. They chew the fat about their tresses or the neighbor's fight.
I was going to ask you about choosing material. When I was here the last time, you've got some songs in here that I didn't hear you do before. How do you make up your programs?
Well, I make the menus for the show. I have for years. And as it happens, all of the menus from prior engagements, for example, in this theater, are on file that I have. And before we come back to a place like we play here at Mohegan Sun, I'm very happy to say twice a year. And when we were here last during the spring, we had a menu, of course. And before last autumn, we had another menu. And I look at everything and see what we've done, what we've repeated more than once. And it's funny because when I get up on the stage here and I look into the audience, I see the same people. I see the same audience comes to hear this music. And it's that is the objective. That's the ultimate aim of everything that any performer wants to do, is to develop what they once called a following. And they come here to hear the music of Frank Sinatra. And fortunately, there is a vast catalog of that music so that we can change things. This time we're doing things different because I didn't want to give the audience the same show that we did here in the spring. Every time the show's just a little bit different.
There's a kind of walk you walk when the world's undone you. There's a kind of walk you walk.
What you do is not unlike what a symphony orchestra does. There's basic repertoire there. There's things that you have to do almost. Like, you know, there's the, when you come to a symphony orchestra, they do Beethoven, they do Brahms, they do Mozart. You do Luck Be a Lady, that's almost a given.
Luck Be a Lady is done because we're in the casino environment here. Mm-hmm. But then again, there are staples, just as you said. And one of them is I've Got the World on a String. We're trying something this time we've never done. We are actually not playing I've Got You Under My Skin. We're replacing it with something else this time from that same era. Now, it's not as popular, as famous as I've Got You Under My Skin, but my viewpoint is, if what I told you is true, we'll look in the audience, see the same faces, it's time they heard something else. They may get tired of hearing that over and over and over again. So we're changing things. But there are other staples. We always do New York, New York. They're expecting that. This appearance here will be the first time that I have performed a song called My Way, which I never did. This past summer, we were in Canada, and at the end of the show, we didn't do My Way. I never have. I thought it was presumptuous for me to sing that song. At the end of the show, the audience in French Canada was chanting, My Way, My Way, My Way. They wanted to hear it. And my guy said to me, what are we going to do? And I said, call the office, have them send out the My Way arrangement. Let's see what happens. So we are now, for the first time, doing My Way.
I had heard about that through our mutual good friend, Terry Anthony, who told me what a hit that was and what a smash you had with that up there.
The people apparently wanted to hear it. I'm surprised that they would accept it from me, but they have.
This continuum of songs that you do, and combined with the vast catalog, as you mentioned, of arrangers, I mean, Jenkins, Riddle, May, Costa, all of those things. You did the arrangement of Without a Song with Cy Oliver, right? So is that Cy Oliver's arrangement you did?
Cy Oliver wrote the original arrangement for Frank Sinatra when they were both on staff with Tommy Dorsey in 1940. And we do a couple of songs from the 40s, a couple from the 50s, a couple from the 60s to show the development of how the music changed through the decades as time passed. Last time here we did a different Cy Oliver arrangement, so I figured let's look and see what else is around. In 1961, my father was very sentimental about things at the time, so he made an album about his years on the band, which was called I Remember Tommy. And that was one of the songs that came off that album. And he got Cy Oliver, who was still alive then. Cy was living in New York. Cy, a historically important figure in jazz music. Tommy Dorsey crossed the color barrier. He and Benny Goodman were the first two guys to cross the color barrier. Black-skinned musicians played with black bands. White-skinned musicians played with white bands at that point. Tommy Dorsey said, what difference could that possibly make? If I want somebody to write for me and he has to be from the black bands, I don't particularly give a damn. So he hired Cy Oliver in 1937. And Cy Oliver was the man who had gotten famous in the music industry for writing almost the entire book for a band run by a man named Jimmy Lunsford, who took all the credit for it. And Cy Oliver was the man who actually wrote the book for the Lunsford band, as they used to call them, swing bands. Tommy said, I want that sound on my band. So he hired Cy Oliver in the 30s, and that was unheard of at that period of time. Later on, he was to use Ernie Wilkins and other black writers at the time, but Cy Oliver broke the color barrier in the white jazz bands 66 years ago. It is, every time I think of Cy, I remember his telling me about the days on the road back then, you know. But this was very, very, this is very, very true. Cy wrote the original Without a Song for Frank Sinatra and Tommy Dorsey in 1940. And this arrangement is actually quite close to it, except we've added French horns and the strings for the record album that was made many years later.
I know you're a great admirer, too, of the Sada Finnegan charts that I recall hearing you at Tabard in the Green years ago, and you had a Sada Finnegan-type ensemble with
it.
You, right?
That was it.
That was something else.
Eddie Sauter, who I worked with, and Bill Finnegan, who I studied with. Bill Finnegan was my teacher. When he was still living in California, Finnegan taught me more in about 6 lessons than I had learned in 3.5 years in music school. Finnegan, I believe, is still alive. Last I heard, he was living somewhere here in Connecticut. This was my understanding. I don't know if that's true. They were the ones who, at the end of the, quote, big band era, they took the big band, trumpets, trombones, and saxophones, plus the rhythm section. They luxuriated that sound with a French horn, the percussion, and the harp. Just a few little symphonic touches. And this was the Sauter Finnegan sound. When I was in music school, all my professors, you'd go to their homes, they had shelves of long playing records. They had all the symphonies, beginning with Bach, going all the way to Bartok, and then they had Sauter Finnegan records. And they just loved it because of the color that they had. Eddie Sauter and Bill Finnegan were two giants. In those days, you had to be a musician to call yourself a musician. Nowadays, it's become diluted, and it no longer seems to have the same impetus, you know. But I was a great admirer of theirs. I still listen to their music.
And my advice Because oftentimes spice is nice.
That was a conversation with Frank Sinatra Jr. during an appearance at Mohegan Sun. Thanks to our producer, Jonathan Higgins. I'm Ron Della Chiesa.